My next guest is veteran journalist and columnist Michael Santoli. He's a senior columnist with Yahoo Finance. You may also recognize him from the days he was writing Barron's Streetwise column, a very good body of work indeed. Hey, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Good to be with you.
So, by the way, you and I are going to be on a panel at the World Money Show in Orlando Resort from February 4th to 7th. I think our panel is on the 7th, right?
Absolutely, yes. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. So, Michael, you know, sometimes difficult to understand and obscure events can change everything, and sometimes they don't. A few weeks ago, a country that has fewer people than Virginia and a smaller economy than Turkey caused a shudder in the financial markets, and it's hard to really understand. Help me get into the weeds of Switzerland's landmark announcement about its currency. What was that?
Well, what it was essentially everything that Switzerland had said it was doing and was going to continue to do in terms of trying to keep its currency, the Swiss franc, pegged at a certain level to the euro. Overnight, the Swiss authorities said, never mind all that. We're going to actually get rid of this idea that we're going to try to very tightly manage the value of the franc against the euro, and we're just going to kind of let it float. And the backstory here is that, you know, Switzerland has been very afraid of having the Swiss franc become too strong. By too strong, people want to put their money in Switzerland for safety. They perceive it to be very conservative. And if they just allowed that to happen, they were afraid that the Swiss franc would be so expensive that it would really kill their economy. Tourism would kind of dry up. Their exports would be very challenged. And so they were trying to fight against that. But, you know, at this point, when there was broad expectations that the euro was going to continue to be pressured, the Swiss said, you know, we don't know if we can fight this fight anymore. And overnight, the Swiss franc went up to 30% in value against the euro and up against most other currencies as well.
Yeah, the thing is, they gave no warning. They didn't talk it down. They didn't make any suggestions, which I don't know. You know, that probably would have caused the same effect. But
yeah,
it was a shock that did have repercussions throughout the world. But I think what's ironic here is that you have a government that's too credible, too much a safe haven. In other words, has handled its financial affairs so well that in a sense, that's a negative in today's world.
It is a negative with regard to how the local Swiss economy performs. Yes, it's a positive, probably longer term, for the stability of the country and
sure,
for the preservation of wealth kept there. But you're right. It is a thing where it seems like a risk in the current world to have your currency be seen as too safe and therefore have it be too strong against other currencies, which for the most part, other countries and central banks are trying to talk down the value of their currencies.
All right, so behind the higher costs for Swiss chocolate and Swiss watches, what does this Swiss surprise do for the typical American? Why does it matter to us, or does it not?
Well, with any luck, it's not really going to matter very much. But the real main transmission mechanism for any kind of trouble that this might have caused probably was going to be through the financial markets. So there was this quick spasm of volatility through the financial markets because so many people had sort of taken the Swiss on their word, and they laid many, many kind of bets across the spectrum of financial assets that were based on the assumption that the Swiss franc would remain basically stable. When that was upended, there was this risk that you had big hedge funds booking a lot of losses,
yeah,
banks caught the wrong way, all that stuff. That did kind of fight its way through the market a little bit, but it hasn't seemed to really have too many aftershocks after the initial impact, probably because the aggregate size of all those bets was not very big.
Also, consumers in Eastern Europe have done a lot of borrowing through Swiss francs due to their ultra-low rates. I mean, more than 40% of the mortgages on the books of Poland's banks are denominated in Swiss francs. Why is that bad for the Polish banks?
Yes, well, it's very bad for the Polish banks, worse for the Polish borrowers who took out those loans. Because if you think about it, you're being paid in a currency, in local Polish currency, that has just lost a ton of value against the currency in which you owe your monthly mortgage payment. So essentially, your mortgage payment just went up by at least 30%,
right,
by you doing nothing. And so that's the reason, first of all, why it's not a good idea to hold debt in a currency that you don't actually earn
mm-hmm.
your money in or have your mm-hmm. income and wealth in. But it wasn't just Poland. It was really across Central and Eastern Europe. In Croatia, the government had to step in and try to buffer these effects with some of their borrowers, too. So, you know, the lesson here is, like, it looked like the Swiss franc was free money because interest rates were so low. But when you consider the currency impact, it was anything but free.
So this is, in technical terms, called the carry trade. This has been going on for years and years and years. People have been borrowing in the yen and using that borrowed money to invest elsewhere. And then again, if the yen goes up, it's more expensive for you to repay those dollars. So
exactly.
It's the same problem. So, you know, we caution American investors, don't trade on margin. There's certain easy rules in order to avoid disaster and to make good investment decisions. And not that we all have the opportunity to borrow money in different currencies, but if you ever get the opportunity, don't do it.
No, that's without a doubt. And this is one area where the fact that, you know, the U.S. economy, believe it or not, is relatively closed, not closed by actual barriers, but basically we mostly make and buy and sell things to and for one another.
Yeah.
It's really not a trade-dependent one. It's not one where we're constantly converting our currency to another one. So probably the temptation's not there. But yeah, the bigger picture lesson is what you say right there. And I think always, whenever you point to any financial crisis, it does often have its roots in exactly that kind of behavior where, you know, you have big institutions that are borrowing in something they feel like it's going to be easier to repay, and they try to stretch for return with that money.
I have seen people come to me with bonds from foreign countries, for example, from Brazil, and they look at the interest rate and they go, that's a 10% interest rate, and I have a 2-year maturity. I mean, how wonderful would it be to earn 10% and get my money back in 2 years? But the fact is, if you're in the real and you're converting back to U.S. currency, the differential in the currency really matters. And those bonds went down to 70 cents on the dollar.
Exactly. Without a doubt. I mean, look, we are in a world right now that is so starved for yield and for sources of cash income that if you find something that seems like it's giving you an easy payout, that's really worth taking. Chances are there's a really good reason why it seems like that good a deal, and it probably isn't one.
Yeah. Sometimes people come to me and they say, you know, I've got a guaranteed, or someone's offering me a guaranteed return of 7 or 8%. And I very simply say, do you know what the yield on the 10-year treasury is? And it's like, no, they don't. Well, it's about 1.8%. So why are you getting 8% when the cost of the safest thing is at 1.8%? The answer is, you're taking on some risk, and if you don't know what that risk is, then, you know, you're the guy at the poker table who's wondering who the patsy is.
Exactly, right.
You're the patsy. So let's change gears here. What do you think about U.S. stocks right here at these levels? Do you have any kind of a sense, you've been doing this a long time, for what this year is going to shape up to be like?
You know, I have pretty decent confidence about 3 weeks ago or so that we were ending last year very much the way we ended 2013. We had almost exactly the same magnitude of rally from the October low to the end of the year. Yet everybody kind of saying, you know what, economy is accelerating in the U.S.
Yeah.
We're all set.
Yeah.
We're off to the races, and buy stocks should be up 10% this year.
Right.
Now, last January was a tough one. We were down almost 6% to the lows,
right.
And then it ended up recovering and being a relatively good year. I think we kind of just saw that same kind of January jitters this time around because of some of the things we talked about, the central bank surprises around the world. Oil crash is just an uncomfortable thing. It's a great thing for the economy on a net basis, but it's uncomfortable to see a huge asset go that way that fast. So I do think we've kind of reset expectations nicely. We went down almost 4% from December 30th to the lows of this month, and I feel as if we've done a good job of tempering people's enthusiasm. So from here on out, it is going to be mostly about companies and their ability to maintain profit margins, because I think we're okay with the fourth quarter earnings not being good. In fact, growth is probably the worst it's going to be in over 2 years. But beyond that, if they say, look, we think we can maintain our margins and we get some decent top line growth, I think we're okay. But there's something that nags at me, which is that the U.S. has outperformed so dramatically the rest of the world for such a long time that it seems as if, and too many people love the U.S. and love the U.S. dollar along with it, that maybe we have to come back to the pack a little bit, either by the other developed markets, you know, catching up a little bit, or, you know, the U.S. market kind of resetting lower. But I'm not terribly alarmed at where we're sitting in terms of the levels. Market's kind of expensive, but not alarmingly so to me. So it's much more going to be about whether that story of a kind of rejuvenated U.S. consumer plays out over the next 3 to 6 months, much more important than what happens in the rest of the world, I think.
Yeah, Bernard Baruch said, you know, you buy when there's blood in the streets. There's blood in the streets in Europe right now.
That's right.
You have to have some courage and a long-term perspective. My guest, Michael Santoli, senior columnist for Yahoo Finance. Michael, great interview. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks.